Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
What's good, internet? It is Monday, February 26th, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 137. 137. Do you say 137 or do you say 137?
I usually say 137.
You should say 137.
Yeah.
Patrick, what about you?
It's also 137 is not even accurate. There is a lost episode of this podcast.
And there's minisodes.
The Gremlins.
Yeah, the Gremlins. I missed that. That episode was good. I need to take some time off and just make a project of restitching that episode together and just drop that one day.
Yeah.
As a little bonus pod.
Bonus pod. Every 10 minutes makes some sense.
Yeah. You know? And then I should just release all the individual bits and be like, it's an ARG.
Make sense of this.
Yeah. Uh-huh, there's a puzzle in here.
Just release the files into the world and be like, I don't know. You guys figure it out.
Somebody do it. Yeah.
Who wants to do free labor for me? That's the Austin Walker model, right?
Oh.
Variant Waypoint's ideology is just do some free shit for us.
Yeah, classic. God. Oh. Shout out to all the fans who've ever done like fan art, though. That stuff's cool. Thank you.
Thank you.
How's everybody doing? How's everybody doing this Monday?
It's a little bit Monday today.
Yeah, a little bit?
It's actually like, this is like the most Monday sludgy Monday that I've felt in a long time. I don't know why.
Danielle has like her full Garfield on.
I'm like... Oh, hey guys.
Uh-huh. Joining us, obviously, Danielle in Garfield cosplay. Patrick, what type of cosplay are you in right now?
It's 55 degrees out, so I'm an excited cosplay because the weather is going to be pretty nice for the next couple days.
Oh. Great. Danica is buried under work right now, so no Danica this week. I'm actually just like normie cosplay today.
Normie
cosplay. Wearing the most normie bullshit I have in my closet. Cuz like I didn't want to be extra today. I just wanted to be real basic. So here I am.
You wearing your normie fit?
I'm wearing my normie. Oh my god, I taught Danielle what fit means last week. Natalie just asked when. I wrote about Monster Hunter, and in it I included the chat transcript in which it was Patrick and I talking about how fucking terrible and evil Nergigante is in our lead up to fight him. And in the middle of that chat exchange, Danica had said, like, check out my outfit's almost perfect, like my look from my Palico
for,
are almost
for
perfect.
Palico, right?
Right, yeah. For her Palico and her were like matching, they are like cats and fur, and it was a whole thing. And so underneath that text, that chat transcript, I just wrote in parentheses like, and by the way, yes, Danica and her Palico's fit is fire, and linked out to it. And Danielle left a note that was like, is there something wrong with this sentence?
I was like, what's a Palico's fit?
Uh-huh.
I thought it was like a Monster Hunter
thing.
Yeah,
can you explain this? This is the mechanic
thing.
I
thought this was like, there's a special kit called a fit.
Fair question.
Yeah, that's fair given Monster Hunter.
But
no, just a fit, just an
outfit. I knew what fire was.
You did. You got that.
I feel like that was the like better one to know at least, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Batting 500, all right? I'm batting 500
you're,
with
you're
that
up
one.
There. Yeah. That's half of it. That's what's important. So yeah, Monday. It is a Monday. It feels like a Monday today. It's like in my gut. I'm like, ugh, I can't believe there's still another 4 days.
Well, last week, this is what happens after you get those short weeks.
Yep. You lose
that
stamina.
Long weekend, that short week, and then like, normal weeks.
Got a lot to do this week. It's a big week in some ways in terms of content. I have to finish a review because I've been playing a lot of Into the Breach, which is the new game from Subset Games. I've talked about it before, so I'm not going to go too deep into it here. But it's a fantastic game. I really love it. It's a tactical. If you remember Subset, they made FTL. Mm-hmm. It's another game in that sort of general style, run-based. Kind of very interested in lots of little meta achievements that unlock new abilities and new kind of things for you to use. It's a game in which you play as a squad of mechs. It's almost as if I think that the easy, like the quickest, dirtiest meets is it's FTL meets Pacific Rim meets Edge of Tomorrow. The Tom Cruise movie where he goes back in time.
You mean Live, Die, Repeat.
Yeah, sorry. I mean Live, Die, Repeat. Oh, I mean, what's the manga's name? The manga has a real fucking cool name. Oh, my God. It's called, I'm going to look it up because it's
Edge
so good.
Edge of Tomorrow manga.
It's, I mean, that's what it's called. It's Edge of Tomorrow manga.
You know.
God, it has the best name. What is it? How does, it's All You Need Is Kill. Is the name of the manga, which is a great name, which is, you know, time travel. You're kind of in a loop. So it's a game in which you play a squad of mechs. You play specifically a mech pilot who's going back in time over and over again to stop these giant bugs from killing the last four remaining settlements of humans on Earth, which has been destroyed in environmental collapse because humans are bad. You kind of have a team of mechs. And it's all very – I just streamed it for an hour, so it's very fresh in my mind. But the thing I love about it is how well it communicates what actual action combat looks like in anime and in movies, and like it's all very like momentum driven. It's all very like you're pushing and pulling on things and like doing cool combos. There was a bit where I had an artillery unit shell behind a big bug so that the explosion would push it closer to my big like mech with huge muscle arms who then like knocked it the fuck out because my regular mech couldn't move forward because it would have put a train that I was trying to protect in danger. And like that stuff feels so cool. So cool. That's out tomorrow. It's like $14.99 on PC. Linux and Mac are coming soon.
Switch eventually,
I hope so. Switch iPad. My understanding is it was really hard for them to get FTL onto iPad, and so they're a little reticent, is my understanding. But
Switch is the new iPad
Switch
anyway.
Switch is the new iPad anyway. So they've said consoles maybe down the line. They'll investigate it. But that's been the thing that's been taking up the most of my time.
I have
a
question about that game.
Yes.
You look at it, you're like, well, that's a strategy game.
Yeah.
And sometimes there are strategy games that are for more people.
Yeah.
And then sometimes there are strategy games for strategy people.
Yeah.
Where does this game fall in that? Like, I'm the kind of person that, like, I look at, like, Civ. I look at 4x4 games.
No.
I look at Stellaris and I go, ah.
No.
Then I like Fire Emblem.
Yep.
I like Advance Wars. I like games that are in that little, like, and that strategy light is even, like, it stretches too close to pejorative. It's more just, like, there's a certain depth at which that, like, I'm interested in. And those games kind of play in that world,
right?
Middle of the pool.
Totally. Yeah. Or like, I think that they're meaningfully different. I think, mm-hmm. You look at something like Advance Wars, which is funny. Sam Barlow, the creative director, and her story messaged me this morning on Twitter. I like tweeted about how much I liked Into the Breach, and he was like, "It's Advance Wars level stuff." I've been playing it with my kids the last few months, and we love it. It is very Advance Wars.
Yeah.
I guess what I mean, usually what I mean by that is like, my interest in strategy games is in like a very limited set of mechanics that had a lot of depth. You can do a lot with very little.
It's so not
it allows people like myself who have a limited experience and even interest in the genre to like get
yes.
into it and get a lot out of it. But then also folks like yourself or others who are really into strategy games, like there's a lot that it ends up servicing both sides.
Yes,
whereas like some of the strategy games that you and Rob talk about, it's just like that is specifically meant for people who are deeply into those types of games and are less meant for folks like myself, or
yeah.
at least that has been my experience.
A lot of the games that we like Stellaris have a ton of options in terms of
I look at that
customizing
and go,
right. this is definitely more in the Advance Wars, the Fire Emblem thing. I think it's even more focused than those games. I think this is a great, great first like strategy game in some ways. In that you really only have a few things to care about. So you have a mech squad of three mechs.
Okay.
There are a bunch of different set teams that you unlock, and you can also choose to – so each team is three unique mechs, right? So like maybe you have – one of my favorite teams is a plane, a kind of rocket launching mech, and then the third one is like it pulses. It's just a little floating like obelisk that does a little pulse in four cardinal directions around it. And so the plane drops bombs. and the bombs drops are smoke bombs, which stops enemies from doing attacks. It kind of disables them for the turn. It kind of like locks them down. The rocket mech shoots rockets that do damage, but it also its rockets do knockback damage. So anything that's like around where in the cardinal directions gets knocked back. And also it spits smoke out of its butt when it does this.
Yeah.
It does like the rocket launches and it leaves smoke in the tile behind you. And then the pulse just does pulse. The rocket mech also has a passive ability that turns all smoke into electric smoke. So not only – like makes it have like thunderstorms inside of it. So not only is it that it stops the enemy from firing, it does damage over time inside of that space. And so you just focus on those three things. You don't ever recruit more units. You don't ever – in that single run through, because it's like FTL. You do a run through of the game. Those are your three units. And you unlock those very slowly. You buy – you earn coins. You earn medals as you get special achievements. So like for instance – the very first squad does lots of knockback. There's lots of like moving tiles around, pulling, pushing. It's very focused on that sort of momentum and like spacing, kind of spatiality is a huge component of this game. And so one of the achievements for the first mech squad that you open is just like knock three enemies into the water, you know, in a single battle. Because the game is split up into like individual battles that you play over the course of the game. And so as you do that, as you do those little achievements, you get points, you unlock a new squad. But each game is just one squad. So you get very familiar with that three character set, which means you become very familiar with like all of the range of tactical options. But the thing that I love is like I played through that first mech squad, you know, whatever, 17 hours ago, and I played them for like an hour and a half. Then I unlocked the next one. I never looked back. But then today on stream, I went back to that first squad, and I was so much better with them. They were so much better than I remembered them being, because now I just generally have a better understanding of how to fight these things and how to set up cool combos. And again, combos in the sense are not like they're not as simple as just like these two mechs do good damage when they're next to each other. It's a lot of this momentum and movement stuff of like, all right, I'm going to use this cool tank I have to knock back these two other enemies so that they're, you know, in line with each other. And then I'm going to do a charge dashing punch to knock them into each other and do bonus damage or whatever. Again, it's very physical. It's very momentum driven. It's all sprite art. So we're not literally talking about like physics, but I'm saying that it's tile based, but it has this sense of momentum and physicality and weight, because these things are all slamming into each other and breaking mountains in half. And you know, there was a mission where I had to destroy a dam to flood an area to separate a bunch of cities from the enemy mechs. And like when you knock that thing out and the whole like half of the zone floods and it just buries all of these units, it's really great.
It sounds similar to the satisfaction you get from like certain puzzle games
where yes.
you're, like thinking just one or two steps ahead to try and set up a, you know, the way that you like in a match three game or something where, or a puzzle fighter, like, because that was a game that I was really into when I was younger, like where, yeah, you set up like something simple, but then it results in like a bunch of really cool things happening at the end.
Totally. Well, the other thing is it tells you what your enemy is going to do. The basic structure of the game is it says, all right, in this next turn, these three bug aliens are going to do the following things. This one's going to shoot that city. This one has webbed up one of your units and is going to hit them for big damage. And this third one, maybe the third one isn't going to do anything, but it just gives a constant passive bonus to everything else. So you have to decide how are you going to take care of those three bugs. They always do the thing they say they're going to do. They never do more damage than they say it's going to do. It never does. There's never a roll chance to see if they actually hit you. The only randomization is, and I think I've said this before, is there's a small chance that a city unit, one of the or like kind of a civilian space, can resist being damaged. Hmm. But it's never enough for you to like – you're never going to be like, all right, and then of course I'll rely on the city to block that damage. It's always like between 15% and 30%. And so that's always like enough to be like, no, I don't want it to get hit. But if it does get hit and it does resist that hit, like it feels
That'd
really
be a
cool.
Good feeling. Yeah.
It's a good feeling. Yeah. I think both of you should try this game.
Yeah.
It is like really – for me, it's giving me some of the vibes I loved about Invisible Ink.
Nice.
The feeling of like, oh, shit, how do I get out of this one? And then like, oh, I can use – this mech can do like a pull. So I can pull this one enemy away and then I can – like it's all the sort of like tricky combos like end up coming together in a very – neat spatial puzzle way. Again, that's out tomorrow. $15 on PC. Really high record. Also, same what's his name? Ben
The composer?
The composer. Prunty, is that right? Ben Prunty? Same composer from FTL.
I didn't really play FTL, but I listened to that soundtrack.
Okay, it's a fucking good soundtrack. Soundtrack to this is also cool. It's very stylish. And also, just one last little note. The maps are just single screen. There's no scrolling around maps. Like, the whole thing has this kind of diorama presentation that is really easy to get into. You can see everything. It's so focused. It has such a really driven design in a way that I did not anticipate. So very high on my list so far this year. So check that out. It. Yeah, you should. It's
What's
good.
It called again?
It's Breach. Called Into the Breach. Into the Breach. Yes, good call. Repeat the name of games.
Making sure.
Yeah, Into you know. The Breach, out tomorrow.
Cool. Into the Breach, out tomorrow.
Out tomorrow.
That's the sequel.
That's the DLC. You know? Out tomorrow.
Good. Very good.
Awesome. So have y'all been playing anything else?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned the diorama bit, because I can talk a little bit about a game I've spent about an hour with. I mentioned this at E3. It was this game called Moss. It was part of Sony's E3 presentation. It was one of the sort of like upcoming VR games, and I was taken by the trailer enough to like try and track that game. It was, there are often very few surprises at E3 that it's like, oh, I should probably go check that out. You usually like kind of booked everything up ahead of time, but this is one of those games where I saw the trailer and I was like, all right, I need to go figure out who the PR person is to see if I can go see this game. The basic setup is you are playing as this little mouse named Quill, and you are exploring environments. Like, that's about as much as they kind of gave away in the E3 trailer. Like, the actual game itself is set up in a world where some sort of evil force takes over. Like, the mice are forced to sort of retreat into like a private sanctuary, and then blah blah blah. You are picked to be a hero when you find like this orb later, and you kind of start exploring the world. But what's unique about it is the way the worlds are set up are single screen, just similar to Into the Breach, single screens in which they are, the visual aesthetic is very much like a diorama, where because it's in VR, it takes on like a much more interesting layer, mm-hmm. because it's a fixed perspective, but then you can, you know, you can tilt your head around, and like the way they have set the world up is very like, they are very aware of like where your head starts, so that
right.
like, you, there are moments where like, you know, when you're controlling, so you can control your head and you can look around the world. You control the mouse with the DualShock, and then when you the camera is keeping track of the position of the controller, because there are certain things in the environment that you, as what they call the reader, because you actually are sort of an omnipotent being, like, present in the world that Quill, the mouse, is aware of. Like, is aware that, like, there's someone watching them and helping them. And what this allows you to do is, like, float the controller around, and then there are, like, statues you can, like, pick up or turn. Things that you can manipulate the environment to help Quill get along. And there's, like, these really nice touches where, like, Quill will, you know, like, navigate around a corner, and it's like you just tilt your head slightly a little bit so you can, like, see where Quill is going. They smartly, when Quill is out of sight from you visually, kind of like a blue hue shows up. So you always know where it is, but if you want to, like, kind of keep track of, like, what's going on, there's some secrets that are hit, like, very much taking advantage of the fact that, like, you should be, like, looking around the environment in, like, weird spots that the game isn't necessarily pointing you the direction of, but if you're like curious and poking around, you'll find some collectibles that are hidden there. And it's just, it makes I always find it hard to tell how much VR is actually enhancing like the experience versus just it's like a gimmick that like it's very hard to separate. Mm-hmm. Even though we're a couple of years into this, even playing this, it's like, as much as it's really cool that I can kind of poke around, like it's difficult for me to parse like how much is VR in, you know, enhancing this, or is it just like a neat gimmick that in 3 hours when my neck hurts, like I wish I could just kind of lay back and like play the game normally. But like in the 45 minutes or so that I've played, it does seem like something where, from like intrinsically to the way they have designed these environments, like not that it wouldn't be enjoyable without VR, but like they have very much tried to make it where like VR is like integral to the aesthetic, to the player experience, and it seems to be something that actually like benefits your interactions with the world. It's incredibly charming. If you like me, grew up with like dark children's cartoons like Secret of Nim or Neverending Story,
right.
Or The Dark Crystal, all movies that should not have been shown to children, but I'm glad they were. They seem to have shaped a lot of my worldview going forward and being tarred by those films. it feels very much in that, like, tonal aesthetic. It feels very much plucked out of that world of people that grew up with those sorts of, like, weirdly dark children's fables. I'm really enjoying my time with it so far. There were actual spider webs in my PlayStation VR headset.
Oh, my God.
I have not touched it since Resident Evil 7.
That sucks.
It came out a year ago. I mean, you know, it's not, like, a lot of spider webs, but, like, enough for, like, dust and, like, a spider web to get in there, which, if you, you know, followed my thoughts on VR prior to, like, sort of the Oculus Rift and the Vive and the PSVR coming out, like, I was very high and remain, like, sort of high on a conceptual level about VR, but even as someone that really likes VR, I would often find myself, like, I never played any of the RE7 DLC because, like, the notion of, like, sitting down, finding which cables were hooked up, like, getting into the right position, it's just a lot.
It's
like,
a lot.
If I could just put out, like, I would look at the PlayStation VR and go, if I could just put this on my head, like, just, hey, I want to check out some VR tonight, just put it on and, like, load up a game, I would be doing it a lot more. And as someone that is both, like, this is part of their job and was, like, sort of, like, a pseudo evangelist for the platform, because I thought I was really excited about the prospects. Like, I think it says a lot of year in.
Yeah.
Have that much hesitation about it.
You don't have it hooked up all the time. You don't have the PSVR, like, just.
I have everything, like, I have it, like, set aside, and, like the USB cable, I've, like, repurposed at times to, like, go charge something else. It's not always just, like, a thing where, plus, I have a unique setup, and, like, because of I have a projector, I don't have what the ideal PSVR works is that it wants you to have a display in front of you in which you can connect everything to the back of that display, put the camera on top of that TV. I can't do that because I have a projector that projects backwards from the back of the room, which means I then need to set the camera up on a weird set of boxes and books so that it can aim down at me. And, like, Moss in particular, like, a lot of games, you don't need to be staring at the camera. It just needs to be able to kind of, like, track
where you're
generally positioning your head. Moss asks that you look straight at the camera for it to do anything. So you can't see this in the pod because I'm showing this on the video. And then, I have to, like, get up on my couch and, like, stare off in a specific direction, holding the controller forward. And it's very uncomfortable.
But very cute. Yeah, cute.
I will say, like, the fact that I'm putting up with some obnoxious bullshit says a lot about it so far. So I'm looking forward to playing more of it. But yeah, if you have a PSVR and probably have a better setup than I do, Moss is definitely something to keep an eye on when I think it comes out tomorrow afternoon.
Cool. Awesome. Do you know how much is that? Because that's, like, one of those things where it's like, oh, you know, for the right price, I might dig out my PSVR to check that out.
Let's see.
You know, like, I probably wouldn't. That's where I'm at right now.
The price was right.
Yeah, like, I have such, like, a mixed relation with VR. Like, so many games, especially with PSVR, have made me a little bit motion sick, like, in a way that I don't feel comfortable with and that, like, takes all the joy out.
$30.
Okay.
It's a real game.
That's an all right price.
It's a real mouse.
It's a real mouse named Moss.
Yeah.
Into it. Into it.
I'm into that game, but I think I'm probably the most VR hater here.
Yeah, probably.
I imagine just because it kind of typically makes me sick.
Yeah, I have, like,
I don't even have a VR at all at home. So
I don't. I'm a big VR culture hater. Like, I get real fucking pissy around the sort of, like, empathy VR empathy game type shit, and, like, a lot of the
Natalie's, like, nodding in the background a lot of
the, like, Games for Change style like VR is gonna save us type shit bugs me out in a big way. I'm very excited by the prospect of artists working in VR who are doing weird things, who are not doing kind of instrumentalized, like, here's how this can save us, like, here's how this can make our lives better stuff. To be clear, the reason why I'm so skeptical of that is because a lot of people who, like, jump to that do it without any research, do it without any actual, like, just assume that the notion of, like, putting someone else in your shoes, quote unquote, could actually communicate something, which is, like, a deeply facile understanding of how empathy works. And
very tiring.
And it's just very – it's just, like, so, like, common sense in the worst way. Whereas the people who are like, oh, I'm going to just, like, use VR to do this wild shit I can't do in any other medium, yes, into it. Like, way into it. And I've had some good time in VR experiences of a very traditional sort that are just, like Like, the one thing that makes me wish I had VR set up is super hot VR, which I just like.
And that is actually, like, the one thing I've really liked in VR. Yeah, I've done that once, and that was like,
oh, okay.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, totally. So, like,
And it instantly makes sense why it's like, that's the, sometimes it was difficult. Like, and that's, you know, I struggle with, like, with Moss. It's like figuring out, like, you know, what is the added benefit other than where was it easier to get investment because you said we're making a VR game.
Right.
Like, and I'm not trying to be, like, throw shade at those developers or, like, to be overly cynical, but, like, that, you know, like, you can see that being a consideration. It's like, hey, we want to go independent and make our game. Like, well, people are really into that VR money. thing right now. And often VR games, partially because the language of developing in VR is still very much in flux, like, what the best practices are. But yes, like, part of what Superhot does that a lot of VR games don't is it instantly communicate why this makes sense in VR as opposed to being on. And Superhot is a totally fun game outside of virtual reality, but in virtual reality, like, immediately, like, it's one of those games I've shown other people.
Right.
Where it's like, hey, like, you, when you tilt your head, like, time moves. They're like, oh, fuck. Yeah. Like, that just immediately communicates what is fascinating about putting an obnoxious headset.
Yes.
Totally.
In a way that a lot of games don't necessarily pull off nearly as well.
And it works with that theme, too.
Totally.
Like, it's in fiction, it's, like, actually perfect.
It is 100% in theme with what Superhot does. Yeah, definitely. I'm curious, endlessly curious about what happens with VR for the next couple of years, but not curious in the, like, I don't have enough time. I don't have enough time to spend on something that I know a tiny percentage of our audience cares about because they don't have the money for VR. We'll see if that shifts in the future, you know, if VR gets cheaper.
Yeah.
And less sick-inducing.
Yeah, that part is really it for me. And I'm also at the point in life where I've become, like, an official old lady.
Right.
I just want the, like, you know, the hand terminals from sci-fi.
Right.
And that's the only technology that exists. And you can just project it anywhere, and that's just that.
And that's it. You're good to go.
It's the only machine you ever need in your entire life.
So once they actually minimize or miniaturize VR enough to just be, like,
just beam it on the wall.
Right.
On your wrist.
Or, like, into your eye. Like, you get, like, a little projector, like, on your cheek.
Little
or, like,
tiny ones?
On, then, like, project lasers into your eyes. Like, almost like Google Glass or whatever. What's the Intel one that's coming out?
Oh, God.
It has a Vaunt. Is that what it's called? I think it's called Vaunt. That just is, like, glasses that shoot lasers into your eyes, which is like that, except now you're in VR.
That sounds awesome.
Verge just did a piece
on it.
Yeah. I think it's called Vaunt. You should look it up. Yeah.
The Vaunt.
Yes, the Vaunt comp test. Yeah. That's like their.
I think both Vive and Oculus have like wireless solutions that are being rolled out this year.
I'm curious to see how all that stuff continues to go and if Leap Motion blows up. We'll see.
The one thing you mentioned, though, is like a VR, like the fastest way to have no one click on your story is to say that you have something to say about like a VR.
No one gives a fuck.
Like this, like it is seismic in how much people will not click on a story, like, because the audience is like, there is a, you know, I part of my like daily regimen of like looking on various things like on Reddit and stuff like that is like checking in on both the Oculus and Vive communities, and like there is a very passionate community of people that are like keeping that alive and relevant as the technology figures itself out, but you need like a real wide breadth in order to, and that's to say that like I'm gonna write about Moss, right? Like, well, fuck it, whatever, like if that game's cool and interesting, like I'll write about it, but like it is worth thinking about, especially if like you're a VR enthusiast and you're like, well, I don't understand why more outlets don't spend more time with VR. It's like, because those places are going to go out of business if they just spend their time writing about VR every day.
The vast majority of our audience just doesn't care. That's true about most major audiences and most major sites, and it's a tough thing because like that's in complete like inversion to the fact that that's where a lot of money is right now, a lot of experimental money, a lot of like,
I wonder if that's still
VC.
True, to be honest. Like, I know a lot of it's going into
AR. AR has been the
AR
big,
is still big
shift.
I can say, so I just did that NYU talk.
Yeah.
And afterwards I went to dinner with a bunch of people in like the New York, like that part of the New York game scene, which is a very specific part that is tied into like establishment VC, governmental grants, stuff like that.
Of course.
Still a lot of money.
Still a lot of money in VR.
Still a lot of.
Certainly the case like 2 years ago, 1 year ago. I just was wondering
still
if
there.
The tide has turned yet or. Okay.
Well, so some of the stuff that's changed is like when I've spoken to developers, essentially like Sony's in outreach post Adam Boyes leaving has been a I'll call it a confusing place from what I've heard from various developers. And the VR stuff especially has been confusing,
sure.
Where there was very much when PSVR VR was announced, like there was the thought was going to, like the reason I think people were unnecessarily harsh on Oculus when they were securing exclusives, it's like they were securing exclusives because there was literally no way to project that you were going to make any money publishing a game for VR, especially ahead of the headsets being on sale. And so securing financing meant that you could make a game and be like, all right, we may not make a ton of money, but we're not going to like have to lay any – like the company will continue to exist. Well, at least, we're not going to make a ton of money, but we're not going to go out of business. And Sony, the thought was early on, Sony was investing in studios
directly,
doing that sort of thing directly, and there is less of that. And that is true across the board. Like there is just less first party investment happening in VR. Which and even look at what of Sony's first party studios? Do you see? Like you don't see the God of War team or Naughty Dog being asked to make VR experiences, and I think that is it's telling. That's hedging your bets. You have limited bandwidth, but it's like the company that makes their own headset isn't necessarily putting in the kinds of there is some stuff. There was that the Until Dawn developers,
the Asylum or some other.
I didn't get a chance to check that out. Which again, probably the fact that
that's
I didn't
telling.
Check out the new thing from the Until Dawn. I need to go back and check that out, but.
There's that Psychonauts game that was supposedly cool.
Yeah,
and
there's Psychonauts VR
look at
thing.
That. And you're the biggest Psychonauts fan right now. Right, right.
Yeah.
But yes.
So
yes.
It's a weird period for virtual reality right now. And I don't know what this looks like in 18 months. Would I be shocked if whenever the PlayStation 5 becomes a reality that there's not another headset and just legacy support? Like, I wouldn't be shocked.
It's weird because at the same time, I've heard from developers that Microsoft is still internally talking to devs about VR things and like, hey, how quickly could you turn around a VR game? And like, that's a weird way to phrase that sentence.
Sure.
So like things like that are still in the air. And like I said, government stuff, like a VC for other uses
we're
of...
We're always a couple years behind.
Yeah, VR is going to have continue to have extensive applications that are
that have
not
nothing to do with games.
The coolest thing, like even if VR, the VR revolution or whatever in video games never comes to pass, like the greatest thing it'll ever have contributed was like whipping a bunch of technology companies and able to raise enough money to create consumer level
VR stuff,
technology.
Yeah.
Like that is a net gain is the fact that like I have like really cool. Like, I have a VR headset sitting next to me that I can use to do all sorts of, like...
That 13-year-old Patrick would have never imagined existed.
Yeah, well, that it is relatively affordable. Right. Like, I'm not saying that, like, a VR headset is cheap. I am just saying in the spectrum of, like, what a headset like that would have cost if there wasn't a consideration made for mass consumerism, like, it would have been... Stuff like that would have cost several thousand dollars.
Right.
The idea that for a couple hundred bucks, you can get a low-grade PlayStation 1 that functions pretty well, like... That is pretty fucking cool.
Right.
It's better than a PlayStation Move.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's like it's cool just because the thing about something like Super Hypercube, which was being prototyped on non VR tech for years, and
on a Wii
with like weird like Wii hacked together thing to do head tracking. Like, oh, VR makes that work, and so I'm excited to see if we get more VR stuff that actually can capitalize and make me drag mine out of storage also. So. Cool. Danielle, have you been up to anything? What have you been playing?
I have been playing a lovely game that requires like 47 disclaimers. I'm playing Where the Water Tastes Like Wine.
Okay, yeah, I can see where
many people that I know worked on, including
I wrote a character for that game. So full disclosure. It's weird. I don't know how I've been having like a weird time knowing how to promote my work in that game because of my role now. And so I've been kind of just like retweeting things sometimes, like, oh, hey, I wrote for this. That's cool.
I worked on this.
What do you think of it? I've barely touched it, so I'm really curious what someone else's perspective is.
For sure. Well, I really like it. And I guess I'll give the sort of very broad level of what it is because I was curious about what this actually was for a very long time. I knew a lot of people who worked on it. I knew a lot of writers who worked on it primarily. I knew what the aesthetic was, this very like sketchy kind of a West, Old West feeling.
Or like it's
rugged
even
feeling.
I think it's like Dust Bowl more than
Dust
Old
Bowl,
West, right? It's
sure.
Like cowboys.
Yeah.
It's like
I think about like playing poker in an old.
Yeah, there's some of that.
But it, That's only a part of it.
Right. But like New York is also there, right? Like
it is. It's like Boston, Rhode Island's also
there. Rhode Island is there. The whole country is there.
I guess rustic or rough-hewn is probably a better term to use here. I kind of knew that about the aesthetic of it. And what it is basically it's sort of like a very high-end IF game that has a lot of other moving
pieces. What's IF like for people who don't? Okay.
Type of game.
What's interactive fiction?
Interactive fiction. have you ever played a Twine game?
Sure.
Explain what a Twine game is. I'm just saying, like,
assume that you're talking to someone who's
Don't use the terminology. Right. Explain what it actually is.
It's a story where you get to make choices about the story as you're playing it.
Primarily driven through text.
Primarily text driven. Okay. Yes.
What's a story?
Okay, Patrick.
A narrative is a beginning, middle, and end that makes some sort of sense out of some type of event.
There you go. Nice.
Good work. Good enough.
Swish. Yeah, absolutely.
It's a good essay. Good SAT.
Thank you. Totally. Thank you. I try. Did my best. But okay, so it's but like, within so this world, like very text-based.
Or like, what are other things that have broken through as IF? Here and there. If you ever played like Sunless Sea, does some of this, Fail Better stuff. What's the actual game that Sunless Sea? Fallen London.
There it is.
Fallen London is like that. Trying to think of anything else that's IF that's really made.
Okay, the beginning of Firewatch.
The beginning of Firewatch
is exactly this.
Or if you've played Lifeline on the phone, is IF. Or really, you can count visual novels in this space. I think that those are IF.
They're in the same wheel.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure. Absolutely. So it begins, I'm not going to spoil anything, but it begins with sort of a scene that sets up what you're going to be doing. And you are sort of a traveler. And you travel the country, and it's America, at least thus far. I'm not very far in. I'm maybe an hour-ish, maybe a little bit further than that. You are traveling America collecting stories. You talk to people. You encounter things on sort of a map of the U.S., and you talk to people and you learn about their stories and you interact with them like, oh, hey, you know, you'll have binary choices like talk to them further or leave them alone, something like that. You talk to a person, you get their story. And then you encounter characters at various points, like special characters. Events. Character events where they're going to ask you for certain types of stories. They're going to want a love story. They're going to want an adventure story or something like that. And so if you're able to kind of collect enough stories to give them what they want and sort of match things where they want, you get further with them and you get more of their stories. So it's almost kind of like a IF collectathon where you're collecting stories.
Yeah.
Which is a cool concept.
Yeah. It's kind of neat. The notion of like – I mean, the other thing is the stories change as you tell them, which I don't know if you've hit that yet. But like, again, full disclosure, I wrote one of the major characters for this game. I was paid to do that. I have not touched that game. So I've not like been part of the ongoing development thing. It was a contract fee. They paid me, you know, a few hundred dollars. I did it between when I was at Giant Bomb and when Waypoint launched. So it was this weird downtime. But the thing that's one of the things that I like about it from what I've played is this notion of like, I ran into one of the stories. I don't want to like give a bunch of stories away or whatever, but there was a bit where it was like, I go to Philadelphia and I did a day job, because you're kind of like positioned as kind of a transient, like a wanderer.
Yeah.
You know, like you don't have a home. You're kind of homeless, right? And you're dealing with – there's lots of like the old hobo code.
I guess I should.
You are also a skeleton. That's true. There's lots of like riding the rails and meeting up with other travelers, other people who are transient. And at one point you like do – I did a day job as someone who was working construction in Philly and like met all these really brave people who were like working in the high rises and the kind of the early skyscrapers being built, and then told that story to somebody else. And then later on, I heard someone else tell the story. And in that version of it, they turned into like, oh, they're these thunderbirds who live up in the high metal buildings of Philadelphia who are building them. They're thunderbirds. They like jump off and fly around. It's cool. It's like, the story I told was that they were like really brave people who build buildings.
Yeah.
And at some point, it's turned into this like modern myth, into this tall tale. And that stuff seems really neat.
Yeah. I like that a lot. I haven't gotten to too much of that, but that was sort of foreshadowed. In portions of the beginning of the story. I really like it, but of course I knew I was going to really like this. Anything that's very story-based, that's very like, deals a lot in the moment-to-moment, that deals with storytelling, that deals with sort of travel, of course I'm going to like it. This is totally my bullshit. I'm interested to see how people respond to it, for sure. And I'm interested to see how people respond to like the way it looks in this sort of overworld area, because it definitely looks like – something that might be on like an itch.io or yeah. something like that. It definitely looks very like a super deliberate aesthetic that is meant to evoke a sort of, I don't want to say cheapness, but like a certain cheapness sounds really pejorative.
Yeah, it's like
a certain like very personal, very like. Can you? I'm looking for a word.
Yeah. I get it. Like it looks like not, not hollow or not like not. It looks very bare. Is what it looks like, right? So there's like it's a flat map of the country that has names of states on it. Has icons where you can go talk to people. You're kind of a low poly 3D skeleton. Yep. There are low poly cars.
Walk around to
low poly like geometry. Oh look, there's like 12 built like square, various squares and rectangles. That's New York City. Yep. I'm gonna walk there. And so that stuff is like. I don't know if that works for me, honestly. Like, yeah, I've only put an hour into it, but I think it doesn't get in the way at the very least.
Yeah.
But I can imagine it putting a lot of people off because it is not like a big bright shiny thing, and it doesn't convey. Like, I don't think you should think about this as like an open world game in the way that you think about open world games. It's
right.
not
it,
that.
It feels like it's an actual open world versus.
I guess. Like, I don't even – I don't know.
Actual open world. Yeah,
what's that mean? It's
hours.
A map
yeah.
you can walk around.
Yes.
Like, that's what it is. It's
an
a
open map.
And I think it's meant to convey a sense of traveling. There's a lot of downtime. There's a button you can hold that lets you start whistling. And if you, like – as you walk, as you hit, like, W to walk
– Now I'm
yeah,
interested.
As you hit W to walk, if you hold down control, a little, like, a little D-pad pops up on the screen. If you hit the buttons in time, you do a little whistle along with whatever background song is playing, and that lets you walk twice as fast. So
it's a little bit of
mechanically better.
Yeah, 100%.
And you get to whistle.
Yeah. And then, like, the actual gamey portion is when you go talk to these special characters who are really well animated, who have really cool, like, design. They ask you, like you said, they ask you for stories. They go, like, they give you a little bit of their story. They say, oh, yeah, I'm an old blue collar laborer. I've been working down the way. And you don't look like you're being sent here from the foreman or from the CEO, but you also don't really look like one of us. Like, I don't know if I can trust you. And then, like, tells a little bit of their story. And then says, like, oh, I could really use I could really go for a thrilling tale, mister, or whatever. And then you pick from your selection of stories that you've heard from everybody else around the map. One of the things that I think people are going to be very frustrated by, especially in the early game where you don't have that many stories, is knowing whether or not one of your stories fits the bill. So there were a number of times when someone's like, I could go for a thrilling tale, and I've given them one, and they go, I'm not one for scary stories. I'm like, that was a thrilling story. That was not a scary story, motherfucker. I wouldn't have told it in a scary – I wasn't a spooky thing, or the other way around where it's like – like, oh, so here's one is I definitely met something that I think is the Jersey Devil. And someone's like, I need a spooky tale. And I'm like, I got you. Well, let me tell you about the Jersey Devil. And they're like, I don't really go for sad stories. I was like, there's nothing sad about a weird winged evil goat. That's just a spooky. That's a spooky
that's
story.
That's spooky. They're so sad. They love goats.
They love goats, I guess.
You know?
But like, eventually it got to, it was like, okay, this is in the category of things that counts as sad. This is in the category of the. So I started to get it a little bit more. But I think that there's a really rough like early patch in terms of internalizing what that exchange is supposed to be.
Yeah.
That said, a lot of the writing that I've seen has been great. Again, I wrote on it, and also, I know people who wrote. Akita Jackson wrote for this game. Lee Alexander wrote for this game.
Laura Michette. Editor or something.
Was the editor Bruno Diaz, who's written for us.
Yes.
Did a lot of writing for this game. Like, there's lots and lots of people.
I will keep going. I'll be like, oh, I know them.
Yeah,
oh, I know them. So it's
totally.
Like 25 disclaimers
totally.
Need to be thrown, papered over everything we say about this.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm really enjoying it thus far, and I like that sort of rough aesthetic quite
a
bit. But I also know that I like this kind of thing.
Queen
so
of Itch.io.
It's one of those. Daniel Queen Rando. Of Itch.io, exactly.
So yeah, that's out this week also.
Yes, the
right?
28th, I think.
Cool.
I believe. The last day of the month.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. Where the water tastes like wine.
Where the water tastes like wine. Really great music also, is
oh
what
my
I'll
God,
say.
Yeah.
Lots of like old-timey guitar, like plus singer. Hit the old dusty trail.
I just love the idea of like instead of collecting baubles or bullshit. You're looting stories.
You're
that's basically
stories.
What you're doing. That's kind of a cool concept.
And you build like a deck of stories, basically, because like you'll end up with – they're all set up into
– like tarot.
Into tarot like card divisions. Types, basically. And so, you know, you'll have like – there's the death card or whatever, and like under the death card, you can under every card type, you can hold three stories. So you might end up with six different stories, and the stories, like I said, level up and change as they get spread. So you're incentivized to kind of mix them up, but you want a nice spread of stories.
Yeah.
But when you're having this like back and forth with somebody, you can only go to one deck type, one like card type once per exchange, and the goal is to like hit what they want enough times for them to divulge a little bit more of their story.
Yeah.
So like. The character that I wrote very briefly, like the first time, he's just like, all right, I'm just a guy. I'm just a priest. He's a priest who travels around. He doesn't have a church of his own. He just travels around and he's like totally like a regular like traveling preacher. And then if you kind of like open him up a little bit by giving him the stories he wants to hear or the types of stories and kind of communicating, yeah, you're on the same level. The next time you run into him, his life has changed. He's gone off. He just finished doing kind of overseeing a funeral for a boy who was killed by the Klan and like is dealing with his issues of his faith and like mm-hmm. what is his role, to what degree is his faith in God and in his, you know, what is his role in life? All of that is kind of shaken a little bit, starts to give you a little bit of detail about his backstory and his life and stuff like that. And that happens yeah. multiple times. And also Sting plays a wolf man.
Oh,
that's Sting.
Right. That's Sting.
Yeah. Sting, the musician, not wow. Sting, the wrestler.
Wow.
Sting, Sting
is the wolf man.
The Desert Rose Sting. Sting and the police Sting.
Yeah. He'll be watching you.
Right.
That wolf.
That is what that character yeah, does.
Really,
so,
he is. Yeah. So
check that out. That's again.
I think it's rad.
A billion disclosures. It's super weird, but I'm glad that I enjoyed.
Wasn't the main designer was like a programmer on Gone
yes,
Home?
Correct.
Jonaman.
Right? Jonaman.
Jonaman Nord again?
Jonaman Yaman.
Jonaman Yaman.
Jonaman.
Jonaman Yaman.
Again. Hold on.
Okay.
I have this
is good.
My email. I'm so bad at everybody just calls him Jonaman. Nobody ever says his last name.
I like that we could have passed on this, but no, we're just going to try and butcher his name a little
Nordigan,
bit further.
Yeah.
All right, good.
That's how it's spelled.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
You would call that a Nordigan. Right?
Nordhagen, maybe. Also, the name of the...
Lord Hagen.
I'm so sorry, Jonaman.
I really like that, you know, he'd been at Fulbright.
Yeah.
And now his new studio is Dim Bulb.
Yeah.
Games.
It's real good.
It's a,
oh,
little, it's a good little.
That is good.
Dimble. So yeah, that's cool. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm going to shout out one thing. I'm going to go to emails in a second, but I want to shout out one other thing that I did this weekend, which is I watched the Winter Brawl, the Dragon Ball FighterZ tournament, kind of one of the first big DB Fighters tournaments that is like – was really cool to see. So I watched Top 32. I watched Top 8. I watched kind of like all of the Dragon Ball FighterZ content that I could watch this weekend.
Dragon Ball FighterZ?
FighterZ. I'm going to fucking say FighterZ. They say it's just FighterZ. But I want to put the Z on it.
Giant Z at the end.
I know. We've been through this.
Yeah.
But it was really cool to see that game played at a competitive level for a couple of reasons. The reason I watched it is because Ben Pack over at Giant Bomb last week mentioned that it was really cool to watch it live because there are all these different people from different kind of fighting game backgrounds colliding on this one game.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that sounds cool. And so when I saw that they were doing the top 32 and the finals on Twitch on the weekend, I was like, oh yeah, I'll tune into some of that. And it was like so cool to watch. Like, I was like completely captured by it. It's really cool to see like, oh, this is someone who primarily plays other games by this developer, Arxis, Guilty Gear, Blaze Blue, stuff like that. Versus someone like Sonic Fox, who we all know primarily as an Injustice or a Mortal Kombat player,
yeah.
versus people who primarily play Marvel versus Capcom. And like this game has kind of fit right in the middle of a lot of these other series and drawn players from Street Fighter, from Marvel, from all over the place, because like everybody loves Dragon Ball Z, and because the game itself is really cool and there's a really great rhythm to it. You know, it's a we didn't really talk about Dragon Ball FighterZ at all, but it's a 3v3 fighting game like Marvel versus Capcom 2. And, you know, it has that same sort of like tag in, tag out stuff. But sorry, I'm thinking in my head, is Marvel 2 3v3 or is only Marvel 3 3v3? I think Marvel 2 was also 3v3. It just has such a cool rhythm in terms of like going from the neutral, which is like you're just like standing off against each other in the middle, to then getting into these great combo strings where you just like pin somebody against the wall and do just incredible like rotating combos with your various characters. But it's never as hectic as Marvel has been for me to watch. I've always found Marvel kind of cool to watch, but kind of boring actually, because once you get into a chain in Marvel, it can just be like devastating. Your characters just get wiped out, and like I think it looks cool, but I've never felt the real drama the way I have while watching something like Street Fighter or Tekken. And it was really cool to see how that stuff played out, and it was also just exciting because everyone had this level of buy-in to Dragon Ball as a series that I didn't expect. And so like, it very much felt like being on the playground or like being at the lunch table and talking shit about Dragon Ball Z with my friends. Like, especially once the finals were commentated by Yipes and Chris Matrix, who are like in the community, you know, in the FGC, well known. Yipes, of course, is like the – if you've ever heard anyone – if you've ever watched a video of Marvel versus Capcom with someone yelling some shit, it was probably Yipes. Okay. He's the one who's like scoops Haagen-Dazs. Like, yeah. That classic, gotcha. Video of Marvel commentary at an arcade. Having them call out like Dragon Ball Z shit was so good in my heart of hearts. It just felt good to hear them, like, for instance, Android 16 is
like, they've been dragged into screaming a bunch of anime bullshit stuff.
Because they're like me, they grew up loving Dragon Ball. Like, okay. Let me tell you, black folks love Dragon Ball. Like, we grew up – like, people in my age group grew up being like, Piccolo is my real dad. And, like, that was, like, true, like, really had this deep connection. I've written about this before years ago. And so having them be like, oh, I'm just excited, Android 16. Android 16's always been my boy the whole time. Or having them just go, like, Gohan, which is, like, the specific way one character in Dragon Ball says Gohan's name over and over whenever he turns up on screen. Or having them – Android 16 does these incredible just, like, powerbomb dunks on people where he just, like, grabs them. And just every time they do it, just, like, naming a classic, like, 90s pro basketball player. It's like, Akeem Olajuwon. Like, boom, did it. Feels so good. It's so and then also being able to be like, oh, this is canonical. This is real. Trunks fought Goku Black. Obviously, everybody knows that from the anime. And like, this is happening right now. I can't believe we're going to get that canon ending. Like, having everybody have that buy-in is so weird. Coming from watching, you know, fighting game tournaments where people care about characters because they care about how they fight and they like their designs and they might like the game story. But it's so different between that and like there's 30 years of fandom around Cell, around this character Cell, around Goku, around like, fuck Vegeta. I hate Vegeta. Like, I just hate Vegeta. Not even in this game. I just hate Vegeta. So now I'm going to root against Vegeta. That stuff is like...
Well, because it's flipped here where you have a long narrative history and then a fighting game framework put on top of it, in which the history of that happening is usually bad video games that people convince themselves are good enough for them to try and enjoy, because all they want is a fighting game with their cool characters that they like. And instead, what they've done is like you know, Arc System Works, like, you know, has like found their, you know, niche here and like elevated this game. Like, this game is elevated beyond just like, oh, it's a pretty good, like, wow, oh, like, that's a pretty good Dragon Ball fighting. Yeah. And like, it's like, nah, like, it's like, it basically has taken the spot that like Marvel vs. Capcom wanted to be, and Capcom fucked up Infinite so badly that that game is already discounted to $20, hoping somebody would buy it. And Dragon Ball is going to become like the it game, probably until Smash Brothers comes around and then like re-centers
even then itself. It might not, because like Smash has such a different community,
but it'll find spot. That's the thing. Like, but I just mean in terms of like
everybody,
like,
is
Dragon Ball is getting a disproportionate amount of attention because it's like, hey, like, this game is both surprisingly good and like it's the it fighting game right now until like the rotations. But my guess is that unlike a lot of these other types of games that then like kind of
Blaze
fade
Blue
out pretty quickly.
Or Guilty Gear. Yeah.
Like, this game, because it's Dragon Ball Z, right? Like, Arc System Works has been making good-ass fighting games for a long time. It's just that there's not as much cultural cachet attached to those characters in the world that they had built for themselves, or even the series that they were building them on. Whereas Dragon Ball is just on a completely different level. And because this game is as good as it is, my guess is in 12 months, it's still going to be a game that people are talking about and playing. And it's going to have a long...
if they give it the support that it needs, like so Danielle, I don't know if you knew this, but Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite is not going to be at Evo this year, which is like a big deal.
Shit.
Like it's the first time a Marvel has not been on, not the first time, but the last few years, Marvel 3 has been a mainstay. Yeah. And the new Marvel game came out. It's not going to Evo. Dragon Ball FighterZ is. To be clear, there will be
and it's Capcom's brand new game, right, which Capcom has underwritten like large of parts Evo. Of like, so it's just assumed that hey, when Capcom has a game to push, it is going to be in Evo because that's just how the way
so this
works.
Felt like a little bit of a slap on the wrist, especially because like
is it also possible if Capcom's like, we have a turd.
Right.
Like, is it easier to just like run from it? Like I think it's possible that maybe it's a mixture of the two. Like the fact that it's being like heavily discounted to like $20, all this other stuff. Like I think Capcom may know we should probably,
we're not going to save this one, right? Or maybe they will. Maybe next year we'll get like a Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite update or whatever. And
I mean, they did that for Street Fighter V, where like they came back with like the, you know,
well,
a year later that was,
and now the Fox.
Yeah, maybe once this this Fox thing happens. So the problem is that won't close for another year.
Doesn't
and change,
that doesn't mean
so
they can't start working on putting Wolverine in?
That's true.
Well, secretly, all of a sudden, here's 30 X-Men characters.
Do you, is this game good now?
Worth it?
The X-Men are here now. Mag fucking Nito. Okay, God. So that was, it's worth watching that stuff. It's so exciting, and also Sonic Fox just had this incredible comeback of just like I love it whenever somebody gets knocked down to losers and then comes back. He looked pretty good. He lost and then like there was a bit in losers like, oh, I'm just gonna win. Like he just decided like, oh, I'm just not gonna get hit anymore, and then just did it. And then someone interviewed him after and was like, so what happened there? He's like, oh, I just decided to not get hit anymore. I was like, oh, okay. Cool.
Good.
And just like the last, I almost fell asleep watching the finals, the grand finals, because he was so dominant. It was like the guy he went against was incredible the entire rest of the tournament, and then just the download. He just like, I know what to do now. Knocked him out, and it was so good.
Wow.
Worth watching. I'm excited to see that at Evo. I'm very excited about it. All right. Sorry for just like, bleh.
No, you're excited about it, and that excitement is giving me a little bit of life on this sludge-ass Monday. So you know I'm happy.
Perfect.
Thank you for the Dragon Ball Z.
God.
Fighters.
Let's go to the question bucket. If you have a question, you can send it to gaming@vice.com. Use question in the subject. Got a couple here to look at, maybe. This one's interesting. I think this one comes in from Robbie, who says, hello, gaming advice. That's us. Robbie from Brick, New Jersey, writing in, hoping to get my question read. But first, a little backstory. Last night, I logged onto Xbox to play PUBG and started to, by checking to see which of my friends were online. I saw someone already playing, so I messaged them, I just made this bigger, and that made it harder for me to read. There we go. So I messaged them, and much to my chagrin, they responded, no thanks, I'm playing solo right now. I was taken aback. Who on earth would play PUBG solo when your boys are right there? And I don't think it's because I'm bad or something. I'm at least as good as they are. So that brings me to my questions. Of course, everyone should play games in whichever way they get the most enjoyment. But what about y'all personally? How do you feel about playing multiplayer games by yourself? Are there any specific multiplayer games you'd rather play alone than with your friends? If so, what games? I, for one, have never been into playing multiplayer games alone, so that's what my single-player games are for. Thanks for your time, and keep doing what you do, because baby is working.
Baby
Thank
is
you very
working.
Much, Robbie.
Robbie.
I've been thinking about this a lot lately because of Monster Hunter, which is like, I have...
Yeah, that was my answer.
I have lots of friends who are like, Austin, come play Monster Hunter with me. And it's like, oh, well... I like playing it alone at night, like as a podcast game, even though
I also don't want to have the conversation of like, what should we do? It's like, I just want to go, like, I want to go get an Anjanath Fang like four times in a row. Cause like, that's what I want to do. And if like you tell me after twice, like, hey, can we do something for like me? And I'll be like, no.
Yeah, actually it's like an errand list. It's like a shopping list. And like, oh, it's like the difference between like, oh,
I want to go to Trader Joe's.
Right.
You want to go somewhere else.
Right. I'm not trying to go to Trader Joe's today. Yeah. I just went to Trader Joe's. I'm trying to go buy jeans.
You have enough of the... God, I forget.
What's a Trader Joe's
like
thing?
The Cinnamon JoJo's.
I have enough Cinnamon JoJo's already.
You have three boxes.
In fact, I'm not even interested in... I don't want a Cinnamon JoJo's switch axe. I need a denim switch axe. I got to go to the jeans store and get me some jeans. God.
You got to get a new fit. That's fire.
Thank you.
No.
Thank you. Thank you, Danielle. But But yeah.
I understand.
But at the same time, what I do like about Monster Hunter is it's almost like destination multiplayer for me, which is like, all right, we've both done our bullshit errands list.
Yeah.
Now let's really play. Let's go after the big thing together. That's exciting.
Like, I'm excited for, like, when you'll ping me and you'll be like, all right, let's take on one
right,
of the elements.
Exactly.
Like, let's just do it. Because it's like, well, so I'll spend the rest of this week, like, gearing up. And, like, I'm going down those trees. I'm getting all that stuff. I'll research Elder Dragons, see which weapons I got to, like, work on upgrading and, like, moving that. And then, like, that's the rhythm I'm enjoying. It's like, I love that there's enough in Monster Hunter World that you can solo and, like, it's satisfying and mechanically interesting. And then there are those moments where it's like, okay, this is that hour where I want to meet up with friends, or mostly you is the one I'm playing with, and like, let's go do that, and then I'm gonna go crawl back into my cave and go back to the grind. Like, it's the way the game had always been described to me, I didn't know it had that specific rhythm, because it felt like it was going to be a game that was incompatible with my lifestyle or my time. And actually, it's a game that slots in like remarkably well to all of those things, because it supports, weirdly, and I say weirdly because I just wasn't aware, it supports a lot of different ways, a lot of different times that you could have to interact with it. And like, depending on what you want to do, like, you can probably, like, whether you have 5 minutes or an hour or 6 hours, like, there's always something you can be doing that is going to make meaningful progress in the game, whether it's the meta or like an actual like moment to moment interaction. And so like, that's that game for me right now, just like you, is like that is the game where I'm going in between it solo. I mean, PUBG was probably the last one that I was like that with, where it was fun to do the streams with like you or play with Will. But I did enjoy doing like the solo stuff. Actually, that one I enjoyed solo, but not that much, because I think the best times I had with the game were playing with other people. And so even when I played solo, while I got something different out of it, I mostly was just thinking, well, if I'm going to play this game, I should just probably do it when I'm doing it with other people.
Danielle, how about you? Are there any things that, like, the thing is, I know all of us are big solo players in general, so I'm curious, maybe the opposite. Is there anything where you've been like, I really want to play this with other people, and that's it?
I have two, like, adjacent things, which is interesting. It's like, this is how I feel about working out sometimes. Like, I love to do my own workouts, but I also am really friendly, and I like to work out with other people, and I miss having teammates. I always had teammates my whole life. Now I have training partners, so I guess that's
similar.
The same.
It's a little different, but...
It is a little different. You can't really do jiu-jitsu with nobody else.
Right.
Like, there's nothing...
Right, but it's also different than, like, a teammate, right? Because, like, if you did high school sports, it was like, all right, we are all in this together. We want to bring home wins for us.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, having a training partner is like, hey, we're training together, but there's no, like, goal that you're working towards in the same way.
I mean,
right?
We, like, go to competitions as teams, but it's individual competition.
Okay.
But it's like, you know, we got three medals as a team.
Right, right, right. That's
so
what
you get
I mean.
A little excited.
Yeah.
It's like Olympic-ish,
versus
I guess,
now,
in that
where, like, you're just doing training with people, right?
Right now. We'll see.
Oh,
going back tonight.
Are you? Wait.
That's why I'm wearing this.
You're going back to what? To
grappling.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Have you thought about going competitive?
Oh, absolutely.
You should go. You should
become
competitive.
There's no question. The only reason I wasn't is because I got hurt.
Right. So maybe you'll be able to have like a real team.
Hopefully in a few months I'll be able to go to a tournament.
That'd be sick. All right. Anyway, sorry.
Oh, yeah. Streaming is also like this for me, weirdly. I often am like, talk to my girlfriend. I'm like, let's stream this, let's stream that, let's do a stream. And she's the one who's like, no.
Actually, I'm trying to be alone right now.
I'm always the one who's like, let's have a team activity that we do. And she's always like, oh, I don't know. I just want to play games.
God.
I understand.
It's tough.
I get it.
Yeah.
On some level. I don't play like any multiple. Like, honestly, this is what's funny. I'm playing, you know, hot new game, BioShock, right now. I'm about to play 2. And, like, I played the shit out of BioShock 2 multiplayer.
Did you?
It's one of, like, 3 multiplayer games in my life that I actually played a lot.
I remember hearing that was surprising.
It was shockingly fun.
It came during the period where every game was having a multiplayer. That was their solution to trying to get people to not sell the game after they beat the single player mode. And so the multiplayer wasn't made by...
It was a super team.
2K Marin.
Digital...
It was a creative assembly.
Oh, wow.
Or Digital Eclipse? Digital Eclipse.
Maybe?
Yeah, Digital. I'm pretty sure Digital Eclipse made. Digital
Extreme. I knew there was digital in there. I think, okay.
Yeah, they like worked on Unreal Tournament in the day. They've done a lot of shooter stuff. But I had heard that was
really
surprisingly good.
And that's the team that goes on to then make Warframe, a game I desperately want to figure out how to get into.
I know.
There you go.
And don't have.
We gotta play that game.
There's the next one.
That's the next
one. Maybe I'll like that.
Maybe. It has cool designs. It has really cool characters.
I played
designs.
Like 10 hours of it once.
Did you? Okay.
Right at launch.
Right. Which is a different like game, five right? It's like years such
ago.
A.
Yeah, I heard that game sucked. Like,
it wasn't great. It wasn't great. But, like, yeah, it's 5 years ago. Yeah, like,
maybe,
they've had a lot of time.
Maybe we should talk about that sometime this year and put some. Yeah. Find, like, a dead zone and be like, hey, this is the month we're gonna get into Warframe.
It's Warframe.
Listen,
March.
People have said, yeah. People in this building keep asking us what our theme weeks are this year. And I'm like, maybe we just have to do
Warframe week.
We're gonna all play Warframe this week. We'll figure it out.
If Monster Hunter had not grabbed us, I think we would have, because we kicked it around a couple of times. Like, we should just like spend like a couple of weeks like just doing a bunch of Warframe streams and like force us to. But then Monster Hunter took.
If you're sorry, Monster,
I'm
sorry,
open
Warframe.
To Warframe. I'll let it be known
in your heart.
I'll let it be known here. I'm open to it.
Okay.
I played those 10 hours that one time.
That's true. But, you know, if you're on our forums over at discourse.zone and you play Warframe, talk in the thread for this episode. You should give us some.
Yeah, what do we need to know? And, like what is the actual what is the investment to get
like,
to the good
honestly,
stuff?
Deeply honest. Be brutally honest with yourself.
Is this a thing where I could contact the developers and be like, could you just make a character so we could dive in
or,
a little? Like, honestly. Like,
right, but or would that fuck us over because we wouldn't know all the crafting systems that we need to know and, all that shit? Be honest. Sorry. I just realized while talking that there was no way that those people could respond to us live right now. I'm exhausted. This
Monday
is killing me. All right. This one comes in from Josh, who says, having worked across so many formats and jobs, my question is, in a constantly changing world where content creators hold increasing amounts of power over the traditional studio/publisher paradigm, where do you see the future of outlets like Waypoint and others, particularly compared to more quote-unquote traditional press outlets and also individual content creators on YouTube, Twitch, and elsewhere? I bring this up because of the layoffs over at Vox last week.
Yes.
I hope everyone over there landed on their feet. I hope that they continue to find work. Okay. And I don't know if people saw that those stories that were coming out then, but the kind of what was largely in the video teams spread across the various Vox verticals. My understanding is that people at Polygon were fine. No, Polygon didn't lose anybody. But the other sites, all lot people at SB Nation
and a lot of
Verge
folks
and Vox, and then
Polygon
just studios.
A lot of places that did huge, a lot of places did huge pivots to Facebook videos.
Right, and so I mean, what they came out and said was, "Hey, these people did great work. They were hitting their goals. They were growing, like all the things you want to see, and all the things that when you have a job, you feel like, all right, I have job security.
Yeah.
We hit all of our goals. We are growing. But that the amount of revenue that they could potentially continue to generate was dropping substantially because of changes at Facebook. And we've spoken before." Four about Facebook as kind of a black box, how the Facebook algorithms change in ways that are really frustrating and often unannounced or underannounced or unexplained. They're like, oh yeah, we're just going to change how things appear in everyone's feed all the time, you know.
Or switch 2 weeks later after like, oh, actually, man, okay,
yeah,
that was
totally
a bad idea.
In ways that like make it hard to plan for and hard to promote your content. There's things in place now where you, even though someone can follow you on Facebook and say, I want to see all of Waypoint stuff, your stuff will be buried unless we as a publication pay to make it, make sure that you see it. It's like all sorts of shit that's like really frustrating and shitty. But more importantly than that, there is just this move right now that's like, oh, wait, maybe video isn't going to save us in terms of funding, in terms of monetization.
Right.
I mean, there'd been this big move from traditional display advertisements, banner ads, stuff like that, to video pre-roll advertisements and mid-roll advertisements over the last few years, especially on platforms like YouTube and Facebook. And what we're seeing is like – I mean, what those places were doing, Facebook was running – you know, was releasing studies every year that was like, here's how you know that video ads are the best in the way of the future. And then like that would shift a little bit the next year and it would be like, here's how we know that people really watch video ads. And then the next year would be like, we've done like a survey of how people feel when video is on and they're positive generally speaking.
Oh my God,
and like shifting away because you can't prove that people click on ads. You just can't – it's not happening. The ads don't produce the sorts of results that advertisers want them to. Advertisers will always want a higher result than what is real,
right.
And that number of what is real is increasingly like unclear. And so, I think a lot of media people are anticipating a shift further away from video, specifically this kind of Facebook video that a lot of sites had invested in. you know, Mashable was recently appraised or recently sold for like what, 18% of what it had been appraised for the year before.
Oh, God.
Something 18 or 20%, like a huge drop off there. We're seeing a lot of content creators move off platform for funding, moving to Patreon instead of being able to monetize their stuff just on YouTube. And I think in general, I think it's a big open question is like, what is the future? And where do we as a site exist in it is definitely something on the very, very forefront of our minds.
Constantly.
Do you have any thoughts on
that? All I'll say is it's terrifying.
Yeah.
And this is why I have other jobs, just in case.
Sure. Totally.
Just in case. Backups are good to have.
Just in case
friends.
The rug is pulled out on all of us constantly.
I mean, that's the thing that's so scary. I mean, like, we've all been at corporations that have had, like, major layoffs, and there's a feeling of, like, oh, when, you know, my number wasn't called that day. Like, my straw was
right.
longer.
We lost
like,
Mike
somebody
last
went to
year.
Die, basically.
We lost
like,
Mike last year. We had no idea we were losing
no
Mike
clue.
In that last year.
Yeah.
No clue. It just like, oh, it happened.
Yeah.
Weird. Okay. Okay. And that wasn't part of a pivot to video or anything.
Right.
That was just like, that happened.
It just happened.
Along with a bunch of other layoffs. And that is a fact of the world we're in. And it's I think the thing that for me is the most scary is this notion of like growth alone can't save you, can't protect you, can't ensure that you will not be let go in a situation like that. Even having a good relationship with your bosses, even having like because fundamentally like companies are in a place where the amount of money that they're investing, they want to see a certain degree of return back. And often the thing that happens is that you set a growth goal or you set a target according to what you think is good for this year, but not necessarily what you want to do altogether, right? Like your the long-term goal is to blow up in a huge way to show what business people call hockey stick growth.
Oh, the hockey stick, that's right.
Yep. Just like what the graph will look like. It'll look like a hockey stick where you grow a little bit, a little bit, a little bit, and then go boom.
Oof.
And like grow like really big like a hockey stick. And the projection is always like, okay, next year, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, you'll get that huge vertical spike of success. And what happened at Vox suggests is like they realize like, oh, we're not going to have that hockey stick growth. We're not going to have that huge vertical boom.
So even if they're growing, whatever.
Whatever.
Yeah.
And like it's very frustrating and very scary. Patrick, as someone who has done YouTube stuff independently, as someone who's been to a bunch of different outlets, like what do you think? Where do you think all this goes? What's a site? What does the media landscape look like in a few years?
I mean, I have no idea. I mean, that's part of the reason that like I do podcasts, I stream, I write. I'm capable of video editing. I'm capable of audio editing. Is not knowing where that's going to go, and just trying to rather than trying to predict exactly where it's all going to land, is just like preparing myself to be versatile enough to like slot in a lot of different places to try and you know, even if writing is my bread and butter, like that's why when I was at Kotaku and some of the independent stuff, it was like trying to adapt like news and features into like a video format. Like, is that something that I could do eventually or down the line? Like, at one point, you know, if I will run out of corporations that I could go work for, like, how would I go and do that on my own while still doing the thing that people tend to look to me for me as sort of like my primary contribution to like video game writing? So I don't know. I have no idea where it's going. Like, I remember when I was thinking of leaving Kotaku when Gawker was going through all its financial stuff. I mean, I remember having like very frank conversations. I was choosing, I mean, I don't mind saying it, I was choosing between going here or going to Rolling Stone. And like the frank conversations I was having with people was like, how do I know you aren't just the latest media corporation that wants to do this for 18 months, realizes that it's a lot harder than you think, and then moves on. And, you know, my considerations that are like, you know, my mindset that was, you know, 8 weeks out from becoming a father. I had just bought a house. You know, my responsibilities financially are like substantially different than they were in the past, in which like you choose to leave a job. There's just a lot more baggage that goes along with that. It's not just about what makes you happy. It's about like how you're going to make sure you're providing and supporting. And so all that still, you know, I mean, even though I felt better about the answer I got from Vice, it's like I also had to be like, you know, realistic that like
totally
changes, like the face outside forces change, like internal goals change, things like Me Too happen. Like there are just like all you can do is try. Like all I've ever tried to do is just like be good at my job, like be nice to people, don't burn bridges, and like continue and also like continue to try to be very good yep. at the thing that I know yep. I'm good at, which is like I'm a good reporter that can like can find stories, and like I've been lucky enough that when things got tough, like someone else goes like, oh yeah, like you're good at that thing, like we'd like that. And I keeps me up at night, like certainly now these days more than most, because I think about it's a lot different when, you know, if I was to wake up tomorrow and not have a job that like just how many more response, you know, I have my wife, she has a good job, like there, I mean there are contingency right. plans, I have right, a savings right. account, like you could, but still it's like it stresses you out in a level that it didn't before when it was just like, oh, I just won't be able to afford as much beer for a little while. Yeah, it's I don't tough. Know. There aren't answers. Like that yeah. is the answer. The answer is there aren't answers. Is like this, you know, Waypoint existed because Vice said, "Hey, we want to put some money into video games."
Yep.
And Austin and I got together and said, "Like,
let's do this.
Fuck it. Let's take this as long. Let's go as far as we can go with this." And that continues to be
the game plan.
Like
right,
the guiding
right.
light is like do it as like try. You know, now we're in more position where we're like trying to, you know. Thinking about long term, thinking about blah, 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 all that stuff that goes into it that is beyond just, yo, let's go make a thing until they stop paying us.
I mean, one of the things that we all said early when we came on, something I said to you, Danielle, and you came on yeah. board, something Patrick, you and I have talked about before when you first visited after we brought you on, right? After you kind of joined mm-hmm. up, was like, this should be a learning experience for everybody. Like
yeah.
I, as an editor-in-chief, want everyone leaving one day in 10 years with a better profile than you have when we came on board. I want everyone to have learned stuff. I want everyone to have like come to a place and like become better people for it. And like it's definitely one of those things that's like if I'm being realistic about the media landscape, I have no fucking idea what's tomorrow. And so one of the things that I have to think about, and I hope everybody thinks about who's in the world of games journalism, the world of journalism and media in general, is like, how do I make choices that are good for me in a year, in 2 years, in 3 years, and not just today? And so for me, that was like a similar thing. It was like, oh, I think this will be good for professional development. Like I loved being at Giant Bomb. I still have a lot of great friends there. I still go over there and do stuff every time I get the chance to. But this was about like, oh, I could do this for the rest of my life and not have much professional development. I wouldn't change much. Like, you know, maybe I could take on some more editing roles. Maybe I could, you know, I'd launched the freelance program there and had been doing some editing, and I had been helping other people write stuff, and or, you know, I'm editing other people's yeah. reviews and stuff like that. But like, there wasn't really a path for me to like keep to learn new talent. Right. I mean, I guess I could have.
You were never going to get into management.
Right, and that would have been – and that's fine, because I don't think that Giant Bomb needed yeah, me to be sure. a manager there in any way. Right. But I wasn't going to get into video editing probably either. I wasn't going to – you know what
right,
I mean.
Right.
And so it was like, oh, this is a whole new challenge, and I can try to learn something new so that down the road, who knows? Like, and that's been really productive for me, and I think the same thing has been true for everybody here. Like lots of stretching, lots of versatility, lots of like – I think everyone here could edit this podcast at this point.
Yep. I think we all have.
I think that's also true.
Yeah. I did all the editing definitely. Early on when we definitely. First started recording.
Yeah, which is like podcast. I think that's yeah. a cool positive thing for us. And I think in general, like if there's a hopeful direction for any of this, it's that I think we'll probably continue to see a lot of folks like us look to crowdfunding platforms
yeah.
so that smaller things can find sustainability in a way that big platforms can't necessarily invest in, right? Like –
and it's proven more durable than my first thought right. on it was, right? Like when I first saw like the kind of funnies right. of the world and or like Easy Allies, the folks that came out right, of like game right, trailers, right. like I've been like certainly there has been in the same way that like Kickstarter or any other crowdfunding, like there is a certain drop off in terms of it, like people get stretched a little thin on how much they can contribute to a lot of different things. But like you look between like NoClip and
yep.
Cloth Map and like there's a lot of people doing and like I've been closely watching sort of like the financials
same.
And how that stuff works, like just in this like we were saying, like when you work in media, you're not just mm-hmm. thinking about your current job, you're thinking about your next job. Not because I'm not even trying to like this is not throwing any
shade.
Or like any criticism towards Vice, but it's always just thinking about like what am I doing 2, 3, 4 years from now to make sure that I can be employed and part of like whatever that world is. And like it's would be, you know, wild to say that I haven't thought about like what if I was to ever do that? Like, what is that world? Like, how does that fit in financially? What would I contribute? How are the finances of those other people changing
yep.
month to month so that you can like, I have a fixed mortgage, I have
right.
to, you know, like, so how would that all work? And like, I've actually been pleasantly surprised to see that has been a lot far more stable than I would have originally.
One of the things that's so exciting about it for me. So I launched a Patreon for Friends at the Table, my tabletop thing this year, right? Which is like me and seven other people, right? Which is a lot of people to split money with. But like, our producer is now full time. She does this full time with us, and that's only with like 2,000 patrons. Something like NoClip has like 4,000 or 5,000 patrons. I think Easy Allies has 6,000. Kind of Funny is tough because they have Kind of Funny and Kind of Funny Gaming as two different Patreons. But that's like 6,000 people on one and 5,000 on the other, and there's probably overlap there. Let's say 8,000 total. Mm-hmm. Let's just say, which is probably high. It's probably like 7,000. But let's say 8,000 people total. That's not a lot of people in the world of media, right? Like, major podcasts you listen to have tens or hundreds of thousands of people listening to them. Like, the fact that that many people can, through direct subscription, like through like supporting their favorite people, let them do this stuff is really amazing. And like, part of the thing to think of or to remember is like, okay, that's not a lot of money. Like, Kind of Funny does pretty well, is my understanding. But it's they have to pay for a lot of things that you don't think of.
Well, yeah, you have to remember, like, let's say you see even someone that's making like on Patreon, like let's say they're making $6,000 a month, which sounds like a ton of money. It's like, well, remember, like when they're filing their taxes, they're filing at 1099, which means that, you know, roughly 50% of their taxes are – so like, oh, actually they're making $3,000 a month. Oh, and actually they're paying for their own health insurance. Right. Oh, and actually like travel equipment is coming out of that. So like $6,000, which like if someone just handed you a check for $6,000 a month, sounds awesome. And it's better than nothing, especially for a lot of folks like getting into things. But – like that money, chips away.
You don't have an HR department. You don't have a legal team to protect you if you get into trouble with something. You don't have a team of people with you who are. Like, I mean, you could have a team of people with you, but then like then you're cutting that money further down. Yep. You know, and so on one hand, it's really great to see that like 4,000 or 5,000 people can make a huge difference in someone's life. But also, it's always important to remember what the limits of that are. But, you know, I think maybe down the road, as more and more people move into that direction, we could see those numbers grow because it becomes a much more standard way of engaging with media. We'll see.
I've been a bit quiet sort of listening to all this. I pay attention to these things as well. And there is sort of another side of this as well, which is something I think everybody who does personality-based media is also beholden to, and that is you're also beholden to your fans in a different way, in a very different way if your fans are directly paying you for your content as opposed to a corporation is paying you for your content.
Totally.
So I'm not saying that's a negative or a positive. I'm just saying that's another sort of set of considerations to also think about in terms of what are you doing? And it is true that a lot of these very successful Patreons, they like not always, but they tend to be like really established white dudes. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not everybody, of course, which is great, but there's something about that too.
Yeah,
that,
totally. That does. It's way harder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you need to be known in order to 100% be able to have people willing to give
you. Yes, totally. I think about even the people – there are people who I support on Patreon who I think make some of the best stuff.
Absolutely,
full stop, and also simultaneously no amount of me retweeting them gives them – as big of a platform as they deserve, or as hard as they work, or whatever, right? Like, it's super. It's a weird.
That part's always going to be hard. That part is always going to be really, really hard.
And one of the things that's so frustrating often is like, the platform has to present itself. Patreon is a platform, and other crowdfunding platforms want to present themselves as meritocracies where the best stuff rises to the top, because that's what gets people to come and sign up to begin with. But also, when you look at the biggest successes just in our own field, it is people who've already had an audience, like to a large degree. And like that is a tough thing to grapple with. At the same time, it's also one of those things where I would like to believe that there are people who are able to find and subsidize their art and their hobby side stuff through Patreon or through other sorts of crowdfunding services where they would previously just be doing that stuff for free or worse, like for way lower wages. I know that when I went from freelancing as a complete freelancer working for places like Paste and GameSpot to having a Patreon. And at that point, I had like a following, but I was not – it was pre-Giant Bomb, right? Like I had like 8,000 followers on Twitter, which is not nothing, but it is not it is not tens of thousands of followers.
Right. It's not sustainable, like, money each month to pay rent.
Yeah. Totally. And it's definitely not that for freelance. Like, freelance, on any given month, working freelance, writing a number of articles for GameSpot and Paste. And I think at the time, I think I was also – God, I was somewhere else, too, at the time. It's been such a long time. It hasn't been. It's been 3 years. It's been no fucking time at all. But
it just feels like 10 years.
It just feels like 10 years. I was making a few $100s. Right. You know, if I did a review at GameSpot plus two or three Paste pieces, I was probably making total $400 or $500.
And that was like a good month, probably.
That was a good month if I actually had that full of a thing. I launched my Patreon, and just from the small set of people who followed my work, that was able to like pay my rent, and that was like an amazing thing. And of course, that's paying my rent before taxes, so it was not able to pay my rent. I was able to pay like half of my rent,
half the rent.
But that's still better than where I was at previously. So between that, between freelance stuff and between teaching, I was able to like make ends meet basically. So I like to think like, okay, that was a better paycheck for me than, and it was also work that I had been previously wanting to do on my blog for free anyway.
Right.
So there are ways to kind of, if you're in that middle zone, hopefully find that support. And I would like to see that continue to grow. And I would like to see that happen in our space too. But it does bring in a new set of considerations. Like, a lot of people ask us, like, why don't you just have a subscription? Why don't you just like turn on subscriptions? And it's like, because that's not – because, okay, what would that look like for us?
Yeah.
All right, well, we would need a way to give premium access to video. Which isn't a thing Twitch lets you do. Twitch doesn't let you have like premium only streams because they need everyone to see all their streams. So they got rid of like private streams. You can't really do it on YouTube. You can do an unlisted thing on YouTube, but that's not really going to fly. Someone's just going to link that out, obviously. Yeah. there's like all sorts of considerations around like, well, how do we make sure that the pricing is right? How do you make sure that people are getting value for what they're paying? How do you make sure that you're having like, that you actually have some sort of format so that like, people can respond and let you know if what you're doing is what they want to see and what they don't. Like, there's a million weird questions around putting together a subscription. What happens, and this is one of the biggest ones, is like, if you are this sort of publication that wants to appeal to readers and also to your subscribers, how do you make sure that you're listening to both sides in the right way? Do you pay more attention to the people who are paying you $5 a month, or the much larger group of people who are just like clicking through? It's a really complex thing, which doesn't mean that it's not something we're thinking about and trying to work out. Obviously, it's like on our long term game plan for sure. It's something we're investigating, but it is a complex thing and always very curious to see how it shakes out. All right. I think that's going to do it for us today.
Yeah.
Whew, long one Monday.
A lot of good stuff.
I'm exhausted. It's 3 o'clock. Fuck. Okay. It's almost 3:30. I'm Austin Walker. Follow me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. Where can people find you, Danielle?
At Danielle R.I.
And you, Patrick?
Subscribe to my Patreon.
Wait a second.
Sorry. You follow me at Patrick.
The masked games journalist launches a Patreon. Who gets all these scoops? Weird. It's
The new I'm gonna start the new sushi.
Yes, the masked scooper. Yeah, Scooper X.
The masked scooper?
The masked scooper.
Not a fan. Follow Waypoint over at twitter.com/waypoint, facebook.com/waypointvice, youtube.com/waypointvice, twitch.tv/waypoint, and as always, waypoint.vice.com. Shout outs to Bowen for letting us use his track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Find out more about that at waypoint.zone/BOEN. As always, come let us know about what your thoughts are, discourse.zone, and specifically, give us your Warframe tips.
Tell us what you think
about Warframe.
What are the Plains of Eidolon like?
Thank you. Tell us about the Plains of Eidolon. Deliver unto us the Plains of Eidolon. All right, that's going to do it for us. Danielle.
Be good and be good at it.
Peace.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.